is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome in, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Our player spotlight gets kicked off in fine fashion today with one of our favorites to speak to, and a man who I know has got to be happy about the outcome of yesterday and how that defense played. Talking about Al Woods joining us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Al, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great. That was, you know, before you joined us, my co-host and I were just sitting there talking about the great moments during the game and just how well the line played, and you guys, you know, on the road, game one, having not played much in the preseason at all, talking about the starters, I've got to imagine you feel incredibly satisfied with that performance of the defense.
Yeah, we as a defense felt good, being that we didn't play a lot in the preseason, but, you know, it's just a start, and, you know, the 24-hour rule is up, it's over, it's on to the next one. So we had fun on the plane talking about it, watching film together, diagnosing it, digesting it. Now it's on to the next. We're on to Tennessee.
Hey, Al, did you already look at the film as a group?
We looked at it on the plane. We hadn't had meetings or anything yet.
Yeah, okay. I'm just curious how you felt. It seemed like the D-line definitely stood out. I mean, if you were going to look at one group, it just seemed like you guys as a collective really played well yesterday.
Yeah, man, it was fun. You know, credit to our coaches getting us ready. The way they structured everything during practice and getting this right and, you know, seeing certain things and the attention to detail was on point. So, you know, credit to those guys getting us ready to put that performance on film. And, you know, it was fun. It was great. Now it's over. Time to reset. Time to do it again.
Al, is there we just talked about the, you know, very little action, if any at all, for a lot of the starters in preseason. Any questions in your mind? You just kind of going, I wonder what it's going to look like. Wonder what it's going to feel like. You know, just your first action out there as a collective. Was there any questions in your mind?
No, not really. Just the guys we were going against in practice did a great job of getting us ready. So we knew if we do, you know, 90% or 100% of what we're doing in practice, that the outcome would be fine.
Al, how was the rotation for you? I saw you played about, I don't know, a third of the snaps, maybe 36%, and, you know, it seems like you guys did a really good job of cycling in and repping guys out, and you got a good repetition cycle going there.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool because everybody is starter quality ready, so. You know, you got to get everybody in, get everybody warmed up, you know, get guys seeing things and, you know, just kind of let the flow of the game come to you. And, you know, it was a good job doing that.
Yeah. What's the mood of the defense like after that opening drive? Because I could see it going two ways. I could see you guys being frustrated that, man, we were out there for over 9 minutes and we couldn't get off the field, yet you held them to a field goal. So it was that the classic bend but don't break situation. Is there a satisfaction like, hey, man, we held them to three there? Or was there, hey, we got to get off the field quicker? What's the mood like after a drive like that?
Just calm down, settling our nerves. Don't get too sporadic or, you know, hey, man, we had them to a good third down and whatever happened, you know, the drive got extended. And, you know, it wasn't a point of fingers. It was more, hey, man, let's calm down and get back to ball and get back to what we've been coached to do, and everything's going to be fine.
You're from Louisiana. Is that where you live in the offseason?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have any family there or anything at the game?
No, not in Indiana. I'll have some when we go down to Houston.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, just curious what it was like to be in, you know, in a regular season game, and it seemed like that place was pretty full. You had a pretty good number of Seahawk fans there. Must have been nice after the year off.
Yeah, it was great, man. You know, you never take for granted that stadium noise or that crowd or, you know, that whole atmosphere. You never take it for granted. So anytime you're out there, you know, that first jog, you know, onto the field, you hear them, you see them, you're like, man, this is awesome. Yeah. So for me, going into that just was like, you know, it never gets old. And, I mean, this is year 11 for me, so it is not one time ever gotten old.
Do you notice when the crowd starts to get quiet? Because I noticed that later as the game went on, obviously the score wasn't in their favor, but that building on TV sounded like it was going to explode. And then as the game wore on, third quarter, late third quarter, you're going, man, I notice a distinct difference in volume. Do you guys pick up on that at all, or are you just too involved in the game at that point?
No, you're really locked in, man. You know, you're even when you're on the sideline, you're still in the game, you know, going through, you know, motions and backfield sets or whatever the case may be. You're still in tune. So, I mean, a lot of times you don't notice that till like the very end. You know, if it's not, you know, basically if it's not a close game, 2-3 minutes left in the fourth quarter, it's virtually empty. So, you know, you kind of notice it then, but, you know, third quarter, you know, you still mashing the gas because, you know, teams or NFL teams, they'll come back, you know, they'll have one spark and then it's an avalanche effect. So you're definitely locked in all the way until the end.
Yeah, I thought also, you know, I told you earlier, I felt like the D-line really stood out. I mean, I know every week you're facing really good opponents, but this is a particularly good offensive line, I thought. And I'm just curious where they rank, because you got guys like Kelly and Quentin Nelson and Mark Lewinsky. That was a pretty good performance against a pretty quality offensive line there.
Yeah, respect to those guys. You know, everybody know what those guys bring to the table. I just credit our preparation. Just bring it down to that preparation, the energy we brought, and refusing not to yield, you know, making sure we imposed our will and, you know, not giving up on anything. I think that was the main thing of that game.
Al, do you get much of an opportunity to watch the offense when you're on the sidelines? Or are you kind of just having conversations with your coaches and looking at pictures and things like that? Because I'm just curious if you were surprised by anything you saw offensively out of this team, because it looked like it was clicking right away.
We try to watch, like, after we get done with our coaches. You know, immediately when we come off the field, we're sitting down, listening to adjustments or anything, you know, Coach Hurt might have seen. After that, then it's kind of, you know, we sitting there talking amongst each other of, you know, how we can combat what's going on or vice versa. And then kind of after all that's done, then you get a peek of what's going on. But it, I mean, from the sideline, it looked crazy. I mean, those passes rushed through to Lockett was awesome.
Yeah, that was a fun to watch. Hey, when you're on the sidelines, you mentioned coming off, you're talking to your coaches, and then you guys get now, I don't know if you were in the league. When I played, it was just a picture that you would get that they would, like, fax it down from the booth.
Oh, yeah. I got those. I got that up until, I think, year 5 or 6. Then they start having the iPad on the sideline.
Okay, so you guys have iPads now.
Dave, they used to draw them on paper with a pencil.
Yeah, it looked horrible after about 3-4 adjustments. You couldn't understand what it was.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it was terrible. But so now you have the iPads, but you can't have video. Is that right?
No, I don't think so. All we get is like pretty much the same thing we got with the pictures. It's the same thing.
Okay.
You just get snaps of what's going on. Right. You get the alignment, then you get like a get off snap, and then into your rush snap, and then that's it. And then it's on to the next play. So it's really, really small, quick pictures. It's kind of the same thing you used to get.
Okay, and it's the difference is it's not black and white, and it's not on that that old fax paper that was like slippery.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever. Yeah, and so, you know, I wonder if you are because I could have really used that when I play, because there's lots of times where you don't really know, like, things happen so fast out on the field, and, you know, sometimes you don't know, like, who's blocking you or, you know. I wasn't a very good player, Al, so I didn't know who was blocking.
Yes,
no,
he
but
was.
Every once in a while, though, you would just be like, man, I have no idea what just happened. And I wonder if you ever experienced that, and then, you know, how nice it is to be able to go over and look at a nice, clear picture of, like, who's blocking you and stuff like that.
Yeah, most definitely. A lot of times I'll be like that. You know, I'll have a key, something that I'm focused on, and sometimes that key moves really, really fast, and I go on to my secondary key. But, you know, being a former player, you know, you train so much at that, a lot of times that's just second nature.
Yeah.
So you do get to that point where it's kind of like, said Hut, oh, boop, you move to your second key, then you be like, oh, man, what happened? Did I do it right?
Yeah.
I hope I did. Well, when I get to the sideline, I don't know if either they yell at me or not, I did good or not. You know, it's okay. So, you know, you can always tell jogging off the field by the coach's tone whether you did something good or you messed something up real quick. Yeah. So, you know, sit down, get to the iPad, be like, oh, it wasn't bad. Okay, cool. On to the next one.
Yeah. Hey, you brought up Tennessee. You guys are moving on to Tennessee. Obviously, they had a disappointing first game of the season. At what point do you feel like a team is who they're going to be? Does it take a few weeks before a team settles into, all right, they're this good or they're this bad, this is just the team they are? Do you feel like watching tape of week one, does that give you much insight into what a team's ultimately going to be?
No. I think probably about 2 or 3 weeks in, teams will really get to settling down. You know, some teams may have guys battling injuries coming back, and you know, there's a whole bunch of list of things, you know, teams go through to try to get themselves ready for Sunday, and guys fighting injuries back. So, you know, like I said, we hadn't looked at Tennessee yet. We plan on doing that today, but you just don't know, man. Some guys will be out, some guys will be in, then you'll come back and look at the film on Monday, and it's like, okay, this guy's playing this position, yada, yada, yada. Then you look at it on Tuesday when they send it to your iPad, and it's like, oh, this guy's back. Okay, this guy's back. So now I need to train this way to combat this. So I think, you know, if you got a team that's coming out fully healthy, then you kind of understand what you're getting up front. But then if you got a team that's guys going to kind of be coming back in spurts, then ultimately it's going to take that team to really show who they really are later down the road.
All right, Al, who do you play after Tennessee?
I have no clue.
That makes Dave so happy.
I just like to test everybody every once in a while, because I was the same way. I mean, it really is that way, though. I mean, you have to focus, you know, like you said, Al, you know, you can't sit there and bask in the glory of your last win and all that stuff. You're just on to the next one, and it's just the next one that's in front of you.
Yeah. I agree.
Hey, Al, congrats on week one. It was a tremendous game, a great way to get the season started, and hopefully we're talking about more games like this and more wins. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
No problem. Thank you all for having me. You have a blessed day.
There you go. There's Al Woods, our first in our player spotlight. It'll happen every day here with Wyman and Bob. And Dave, you just got a knack of really drawing the best out of some of our guests.
Yeah, that's right. It was similar to the Ty France interview.
Well, you got some noise out of this. At least he made a sound. He threw out a word. He threw out a couple of words. Ty France, it was almost like the mic. We looked at each other like, did the mic go dead? Did the battery die? He was on a wireless mic in the stands and just didn't utter a sound. Not a sigh, not a giggle, nothing.
Sometimes you swing and miss. I was going to ask him about the farm or the ranch that he works on, but yeah. I feel like
we've hit that pretty well with him, haven't we?
We did, and I also interviewed him with Kurt Menefee, and I think I said during that one, I go, Al, I think I asked you one too many questions about the farm that you own, but what time do you get up to go? No, something like that. So anyway, I just think it's really interesting that he has that as, you know, it's like a whole nother job. I mean, somebody's going to text in that I said whole nother. It's whole nother
preemptive
job.
Strike by you. That's good.
Yeah, but that's just the way I talk. That's just the way it is. What did Pete say today?
What did he say?
What was his thing that he said today? He said, a heralded opening. And then he starts talking and he's like, heralded opening?
You got to like when he calls himself
whole nother. But, yeah, I mean, it's just interesting to me that he has, you know, this farm that he works on. And, you know, he's got a whole rest of his life set as soon as football's over for him. And it sounds like he really missed it last year.
Don't you feel like he looks at that as this is what I do, but football's fun and how I make money.
Passion, yeah.
Like, that's his job. His job is the farm and doing that thing. He works with his dad. And
yeah.
What he's been brought up doing, like, that's just this is who I am. Football, yeah, this is cool and I like it, but this is who I am.
No, I don't know. I think he's still probably thinking that he's a football player, because that's the way you have to be. I mean, you have to be all in on it. So, I mean, I think that's something that he can fall back on, but I would think it, you know, as far as what if it's a pie chart that's taking up his brain, whether it's one or the other, to me, football's probably 90%.
Yeah. And he's, I mean, he's certain, not that he doesn't love the game or anything, but it just, when you make that kind of commitment to what he does with that farm, getting up at whatever it is, 4 a.m.
And for you, working, that's pretty much everything.
Oh, man.
You wouldn't mind the work and all that. You just don't want to get up at 4 a.m.
Yeah, that represents the commitment. You want to lift heavy things? Okay, I can get there with you. But you want to do it at 4 a.m? I can't get there with you.
Yeah.
I'm going to bed at that point.
And he said that he like gets up and works out, gets on the bike and stuff right away, so then lifts later. But he's part of a defense that the longest play they gave up was 24. So I'm looking at their top 10 longest plays. They did not have what they considered to be an explosive run. They did not give up an explosive run, which is 12 yards for them.
And pass is 20, right?
Pass is 16.
16 for explosive?
I'll have to check, but that's how they, you know, typically to me, in I think ESPN, it's 10 and 20, but I think Pete has it at 12 and 16. So 12 plus is an explosive run play, which they did not give up. And then 16 is a pass, and they only had 4 of those. So they gave up a 24-yarder, and that was the one that he was talking about where they kind of screwed up on their coverage there. And I don't know if it was between DJ Reed or, you know, he said it got away from them.
Yeah.
It was like a big, deep crossing route. But that was the one where Diggs comes up and just hammers him. And I thought maybe he was going to pop the ball out.
Yeah, well, we saw the one play I was talking to you about. We didn't brought it up, but it was a 3rd and 13, and they gave up 16 on that one. Yeah. And I think that was Reed. I don't know what happened in the coverage. It was in the third quarter, I believe.
What do you think about his holding penalty? Pass interference?
That was lame.
I thought so, too.
He didn't even look. Sometimes you'll see, you know, when you see the super slow-mo, you'll see, like, they're holding the jersey down low for a second, right, then they let go. You'll see where they had a grip on the jersey at some point. I didn't even see that. Like, he touched him with his hand, but I didn't see him grab anything, and the touch was just that. It was like a touch. His hand was off. I thought that was such a bogus penalty.
Well, and I didn't think it was. I mean, it was still way over his head. I don't think it was one of those.
That's what Pete was yelling about. Like, man, that thing was 18 yards out of bounds, and
uncatchable. You know,
he didn't even like direct them. Sometimes you'll see him kind of move their hands, like sort of trying to direct which way that guy's running. He didn't do that. Didn't grab the jersey at the bottom. None of the little shifty things you'll see cornerbacks do sometimes. He didn't do that.
It was like a split second that maybe his hand was on the guy's shoulder pad. So. Yeah.
It was lame.
I thought that was bad, too. But I complain about every call pretty much.
But so. you're justified in that one.
Yeah. So, I mean, they. But really, I mean, you look at on the other side of the ball, I mean, they had 5 plays over 20 yards. So some big explosive plays. And Pete always talks about explosive play differential. And, you know, and sometimes they'll add that to, you know, a turnover differential, which they went -1, right? Could have gone -2. I'll tell you what, man, if that punt had gotten blocked, that would have changed the entire landscape of that game, because Michael Dixon was able to pull it down and, you know, run to his right. And unlike the Cleveland punter that Lefko was showing us before the show, you know, he didn't try to run or anything, and he just was able to kick it. But, and this is something I remember from when Rusty Tillman was the special team coach for the Seahawks, the late, great Rusty Tillman, is that if you block a punt in a game, in an NFL game, you have a really good chance. And if you look it up on the internet, it's like 90%. Mm. 90% if you block a punt. And so, yeah, it's kind of weird because the Seahawks blocked a punt against the Giants last year.
Yeah.
Lost. But
lost the game.
Yeah.
They still found a way to lose.
Still
to
found
Colt
a way
McCoy.
To let Colt McCoy beat you. But we'll let that go.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was a good play by him. And it looked like the flash of the jersey came over Radigan. Radigan, the Army linebacker, who's a rookie, and they were rushing the punt really hard. They were trying to get a blocked punt there. So there was a couple that were really close, but really heads up play by Dixon. I mean, the guy every year, you know, you're just more and more impressed by the things that he can do. Remember the one in 18 where he ran it out of the Detroit Lions end zone?
Yeah, he got that's the one where he was anointed with a really cool nickname.
Yeah.
Yeah. The dude's a weapon. I mean, he really is. You always joke about, you know, if you're kicking the ball, if the ball's hitting your foot, you're not a football player. You know, but.
Yeah, that's right, Bob.
He's that dude is a weapon. He absolutely changes the field. I mean, it's when he's not there or when he doesn't, you know, connect on one, you see the difference. The starting position of the enemy, if you will, is completely different. So to have a guy who can consistently do what he does is amazing.
Yeah, well, and then he makes that kind of play. I mean, that was really heads up. That could have changed the entire path of this game. Well, it definitely would have because, yeah, that's a huge play in the NFL. So good job by him. But yeah, I think, you know, other than I was talking about turnovers and basically, yeah, they didn't get any, but or they got the one, so it just ended up being even as far as turnover ratio goes. I'm hoping that comes back because remember in 2019, that's the one thing they did do. They took the ball away. They were not great on defense. They didn't get a lot of sacks, but they did take the ball away. And then last year, not great as far as takeaway ratio goes.
But the sack numbers went up.
Yeah, but the sack numbers went up. So yeah. Usually when that happens, the turnover ratio increases as well because, you know, you get strip sacks and things like that. They just didn't get those. So that's something that this defense has always thrived on, and hopefully they get back to it this year.
All right. A reminder, Mike Salk is back in the mornings each weekday from 6 to 10 a.m., including the Jerry DePoto Show every Thursday at 8:30 a.m. So tune in for that. Coming up, a massive series against the Boston Red Sox starts tonight. We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Mariners taking on the Red Sox tonight, and the T-Mobile Park roof will be, I'll say, open. I haven't even really looked outside. I can kind of see outside from across the newsroom. I see some sun, so I'm just going with open.
You sure blew it on Friday, man.
I did not.
I'm just kidding.
I'm undefeated. Come on.
Well, we were sitting there, and all of a sudden it just started closing. And so, yeah. You had your answer right there.
Yeah, they've made it very simple. That's the Mariners roof report covered by Acton's Quality Roofing. This is a huge series, Dave. I know we're in Seahawks heaven, Seahawks mania right now, but the Mariners season is winding down, and they are still in this. They are still in this. What is today? September what? What's the date?
13th.
The 13th. September 13th, and they are three games back. You've got Toronto and Boston tied. They occupy the top two spots. Toronto is 80-63. The Red Sox are 81-64. And the Yankees are right in front of you. They are 80-64 as well. So you've got the Mariners and the A's tied right now. They're both three games back.
All right.
Both 77-66. So you're tied. You got seven games coming up with the A's, but you got a three-game series with Boston. This is a huge series. And Boston's not been playing well. They're 5-5 in their last 10.
All right. And so you look at, you know, Oakland, New York, Boston there. They've got 10 games against both Oakland and Boston coming up here. So this is where you can make some hay. Hopefully, again, you know, we keep saying this, looking back on the Kansas City series where they left 40 base runners stranded, and then you look at maybe one of the worst bullpens in all of baseball, Arizona, you lose that series. So, you know, but this is the kind of team, the way they played this year, that they lose that series and then sweep Boston.
Yeah, they've been very contrary to what common sense would tell you. Okay, they're playing a bad team. They've got a good shot here. They're playing a good team. All right, could be rough. And through 162 games, a lot of that's going to be true. They've been waxed by the Houston Astros, who are a very stacked team. But they've also beaten Tampa Bay, and they've handled other teams that you look at and say, those are good teams, man, and they had their way with them. So this is going to be – man, it's I love that it's coming down to the wire. I love that it matters. I love that there's something on the line. This is a huge series. But I've got to imagine as a player, and I don't know if you've ever been in this position in your career, but where you get to a point where you're relying on other teams to sort of do work for you. Like, man, I hope this team beats that team and that helps us. And because then you're really going to point to, man, those first two games against Kansas City, we had four-run leads in each of those games and gacked it. We lost two to the second worst team in all of baseball. Came in 51 games under 500. We lost two of three to that. You're going to start isolating these moments and going, man, if we would have just shown up here, if we would have just done this better in this game, we wouldn't be relying on, you know, Toronto to do this or this team to beat Toronto or this team to beat Boston for us.
Right.
That's going to be a terrible position as an athlete to be in where you're relying on other teams to help you.
Yeah. Usually you don't think it, and like my brilliant question to Al Woods, or it was more of a statement, Bob, that you just only look at, you know, what you can, all you can do is control what's in front of you and who you're playing. So I do remember one time in 1990 where we were 9-7 and all we needed was the Houston Oilers at the time had Commander Cody Carlson as their quarterback because Warren Moon got hurt. We had played the Houston Oilers earlier in the year and totally shut them down. They had that red gun or whatever, the run-and-shoot type of stuff. Totally. Mm-hmm. We handed Pittsburgh the blueprint of how to stop that offense, and they couldn't do it, and against the backup quarterback. So, you know, we're sitting there watching this game and, you know, going, well, we need Pittsburgh to win, and we would have gotten in the playoffs. And they didn't. So that's it's a helpless feeling. And I just remember thinking, I don't ever want to be in this position again, you know,
yeah,
where you have to rely on somebody else. You only want to rely on yourself. And so it's got to be, you know, frustrating for these guys when they see some of these other games, especially if you see somebody blow a lead or something and they're, you know, leading the team that, you know, that you need to lose. So
yeah, I was watching the score for the Yankees game earlier today. They ended up going to extra innings and won. And I'm like, well, thanks for nothing, Minnesota. You know, yeah, I mean, that's right. Kind of where it's not Minnesota's job to get the Seattle Mariners in the playoffs. I'm looking at it, you know, any little bit helps, but you know, this will be a situation where if the Mariners don't make it and it comes down to the final few games, you're going to start picking apart the schedule going, well, look what happened here. Like I just said, the Kansas City series, that's a team. The Padres at that time were rolling. They were red hot. Should the Mariners have been more competitive? Yeah. But was it surprising they lost? No. It was the manner in which they lost that was disturbing about that. I was more bothered by what happened against the Astros after the trade, those two games. They just got blitzed in those two games. The first two games of the Kansas City series, like I said, having four-run leads in each of those games, and you couldn't find a way to pull out a win in either of those. And then this most recent one, you're just going, come on, man. The Arizona Diamondbacks on your home field take 2 of 3 from you.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't want to be, you know, them kicking themselves at the end of the season going, man, if we miss it by a game, if we just pulled out one of those games or two of those games, whatever the number ends up being, it feels like that would haunt you in the offseason. You'd just be sitting there just, yeah. Oh, I can't believe we missed it by a game or two games or whatever that number is. And then you just go through and start looking at each individual game where you're like, yeah, we booted that one. We booted that one.
Right.
There's the difference.
Well, and it's easier for us fans because we didn't expect this to happen. The players, try telling them, oh, this is a rebuild year, we're going to lose. And they're like, no, they're a bunch of competitors.
Yeah, we tried in the beginning of the year when we were doing interviews. Remember, yeah. We were asking, or at least I was asking them about, hey, man, you know, the message from management has basically been this year's not so much about wins and losses. It's about development. And when you hear that, what do you think? And all of them were like, we don't think of that.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, we're not thinking that way.
Yeah, you're not thinking about the future because, first of all, you're not even sure if you're going to be part of it in some cases. But the other thing is you're a competitor, man. So, and this is why these guys are playing well. I was just looking at the notes from the Mariners. Ty France, since the All-Star game, the break, I should say, he's tied with Amed Rosario from Cleveland and Whit Merrifield for most hits in the American League with 67. So,
wow.
Yeah, he needs to step up here. And he's also defensively, 7 defensive runs saved, leads the American League as a first baseman. How about that?
He's been so good there. It's so fun to watch how good he's become.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes you feel good about the way they can handle, if they choose to, Evan White. There's zero pressure to rush him up here next year. If they want to start him out in AAA in the beginning of the season, just let him find his groove, let him find his swing, his confidence. You've got that luxury. You've got Ty France. Now we've talked about this before. We don't know what their plan is to compensate for the loss of Seager, assuming he moves on. How do you shuffle the pieces? You've got options with Ty France. You've got options with Toro. You can move those guys in different spots. Is that what they want to do? Do they go out and acquire somebody to fill that spot and leave Toro at second, leave France at first? So there's options on the table, but it's a good problem to have looking at Ty France going, man, not only does this guy hit, and in fact, he's our best hitter right now, he's a phenomenal defender. He's becoming a phenomenal defender. He's anything but a liability there. There is no urgency to get Evan White there.
Do you think Toro can become that at second base? I was watching.
Still looks a little.
I think Friday night where he had a wide throw that still should have been caught, I think they were saying that, you know. But he, and really it looked like he just stepped, like he opened his stance and, you know, ended up throwing it offline.
That is jarring. I'm sorry.
Okay. Bob, this is why we shouldn't have a TV in here. No, I'm kidding.
They just showed Mark Davis on
Lefko
screen.
Lefko is also shaking his head.
That is a jarring look. I don't know what you call it. It's sort of corpse-esque. He doesn't look to be breathing. He looks just to be propped up in a chair in a full white suit with the Lloyd Christmas haircut and that face. He is one of the stranger-looking humans I've ever seen.
Yeah, this being the owner of the Las Vegas Raiders.
He's got the money to fix it up.
Yeah.
He could do something.
I saw him at a steakhouse down in L.A., what, 2-3 years ago? And he walked past. It was some place down there. I can't remember the name of it. It might have been called Sardi's, Bob. I don't remember, but the place from Seinfeld that you continually badgered me about.
Yeah. Dave, Sardi's, come on.
You don't remember that? I can't remember the name of the place. Oh, I know. It was called Dan Tana's. And
oh,
it was
okay.
Like an
I've
old school steakhouse.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah. And yeah, Pearson, my buddy Dave Pearson was, you know, always wanted to go there. So he took me there. He's like, you got to go to this place. It's great. It's old school. So we went there. We saw somebody from Seinfeld. Oh, I know. The best, Jerry. The best.
Oh, Kenny.
Kenny.
Banya.
Banya. Yeah.
That seems too coincidental.
Yeah, we saw him. And then we saw, you know, Mark Davis because
him and his hair.
Yeah. And I thought about saying something.
About his hair?
Yeah. It was like, how much do you pay for that haircut? Seriously. And could you just put a bowl over the top of it and do just as good? I'll do it for you.
It's amazing. Somebody with the financial wherewithal that he has walks around like that. It's just an interesting look.
Because he can. You know, they have that thing like, I've got bleep you money.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has bleep you money, Bob.
Well, maybe he should spend some of that on his bleep you haircut.
No. Well, I heard he like flies somewhere to get it. Like I want to say it was like a place like Bakersfield, where like he takes a, you know,
a
$1,000 plane flight or whatever for him to get there. He probably gets in his private jet. I don't know how much that costs.
That's even sadder.
Goes down and gets
like making an extra effort to achieve that look.
Yeah, it's like a $25 haircut. Probably tips him a couple $100 or something.
Oh my goodness! All right. Well, I'm sorry. I looked up and it was just a jarring shot. Coming up, Shane Waldron is on his way to helping Russell Wilson achieve a brand new milestone. We'll tell you what that's about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We've got the Mariners pregame show coming up at the top of the hour as they get set for game one of their series against the Boston Red Sox. Do you think the stands will be full of Red Sox fans? They tend to do that. Usually it's the Red Sox, it's the Blue Jays, certainly, in normal times. The Yankees, the Giants tend to bring out a lot of people there as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I said, I think the Seattle fans are becoming like the annoying fans that people don't like.
That show up in other cities,
yeah,
and are
like
loud.
The Toronto fans that come down here. Who else? Yeah, Boston, New York. You know, it's like Cowboy fans, Raider fans. But yesterday, I mean, the noise on the broadcast, I was surprised.
It sounded really loud.
The Seahawks fans were making.
Yeah, you could hear the chant. You could certainly, as the game wore on and the Colts fans got a little quieter, then they really stood out. But even in the beginning, you could hear when something good would happen for the Seahawks, the Lockett touchdowns or what have you. There was a lot of noise going on. There was a lot of cheering going on. I'll give the Seahawks fans the 12s credit. They travel well.
Yeah.
They really do.
They do. And it's become, I don't know, I guess a point of pride for them to show up in other places. And also, you know, geographically, it's a huge expanse as far as, you know, you get lots of fans that are out in the middle of nowhere and they want to, you know, go around. A lot of people, like, that's what their vacation is. So, like, they're not going to France or, you know, Hawaii or anything. It's like, we're going to go to every Seahawk game.
We're going to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Hey, and speaking of fans, if you want to win two tickets to see the Seahawks 2021 home opener at Lumen Field this Sunday, here's what you do. Text the word BLITZ, B-L-I-T-Z, Text that to 710-710 and enter the secret code word that you get in the bounce back. You do that at the link for your chance to win two tickets to Sunday's game. And just a little hint, it's got something to do with my co-host here. So the contest ends this Wednesday at noon, so text BLITZ to 710-710 right now for your chance to enter and win. Again, the word is BLITZ. 710-710. Best of luck to you guys.
Also, if you could, text in to 710-710, not only BLITZ, but also, what have you had a KJ Wright sighting yet? I understand his number is 34.
Yeah, we had to look that up because we're the Raiders are playing the Ravens right now. And
I'm not 100% sure on that. I'm trying to look at where did I get that
on his number?
I mean, it was on the internet, Bob.
Well, so, I'm looking on the ESPN team page for the Raiders, and he's listed as number 34.
Okay. Yeah, and somebody said that they spotted him or whatever. I'm not sure if he's...
And they got him as the starter at the strong side linebacker.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, we'll see. I mean, look, it's not like they... The linebackers yesterday, I mean, most of the time there was two. And, you know, I always count Daryl Taylor as, you know, like
he's
a defensive
an end.
Isn't he? Yeah, to me he is. I mean, I didn't see him dropping back into coverage. I mean, I don't think at all, but I have to go back through it. But also, you know, I saw Rasheem Green dropping back.
Yeah.
You know, and we saw Alton Robinson in the preseason dropping back.
Yeah, and we saw who else? We saw Belor out there running down the field with people.
Yeah.
In coverage. Yeah, the Alton Robinson one was the one that caught your eye. Big old dude running down the sidelines with a receiver.
Yeah, with Zay Jones, who's like one of the fastest guys in the league. So, yeah, it's interesting. We'll see how – but, yeah, I mean, you can root for KJ. No problem.
I'm rooting – listen, he's on an AFC team. So if he's not going to be on the Seahawks, then I'm happy he's on a team in the other conference. So you don't have to worry about it unless you both get to the Super Bowl. But – there's no conflict with really pulling for him to do well. Yeah. And he's it'd be impossible. Even if he was on another team in the NFC, it would still be hard to root against KJ. You can't do it. Can't do it. It's not possible.
People are still randomly texting in my name. It's like, it's not getting you anything.
It's not going to help you at all other than just the satisfaction of knowing you texted in his name.
Just to annoy me, I guess, maybe, or annoy us, Lefko.
Yeah, the word is blitz. That's the blitz. Word you want to text in. If you want to win Seahawks tickets to the game this weekend, the home opener, first time they've had fans in the building since 2019, if you want to be there for it, text in the word blitz. That's what you need to text into 710-710, and then you'll get a bounce back code word that you'll have to you'll enter for your chance to win. So
by the way, did you see Blitz out there and the Colts mascot threw like a pie in his face?
No.
Yeah, I'm 99% sure it was Blitz. I mean, it was him. It was our guy, and he was over there, and they were doing like this skit, and they had like a cream pie that the Colt threw in his face.
I didn't know Blitz traveled with the team.
I didn't think so either. But
wow, I had no idea that the mascot traveled with the team.
Well, maybe, I'll tell you what, maybe it was like a knockoff or something, but it looked authentic. It looked like our Blitz.
And oh, you think maybe they had one of their people?
Okay. But if they did, they sure spent a lot of time and possibly money on recreating Blitz.
The cheerleaders don't travel with the team, do they?
No.
Huh.
Nope.
I didn't even see that. So, no, that's interesting. All right. As we said, you got the Mariners, you got the Boston Red Sox, and hopefully we're talking about a win. We're talking about a winning series. It gets underway tonight. I want to thank our guests today. You had Pete Carroll on from the press conference. We had Michael Bumpus. We had John Clayton. We had Al Woods. If you missed any of that, all you need to do is head to 710sports.com, click that podcast tab, scroll down to our picture and click on that. And everything you miss each and every day is waiting for you right there. Just a little heads up, our player spotlight tomorrow will feature Rasheem Green, who's been outstanding so far through the preseason and the first game. So tune in for that. We're back tomorrow with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.